So good afternoon. I will talk about this, which is my PhD project at the Kapteyn Institute, and to which I am working together with Leon. So I think the main problem we want to tackle is very closely related to what we have been discussing to this meeting. And in particular, what we would like to understand is the mass structure of the elliptical galaxies and how does this evolve with time. So in my opinion, this is a very important issue, because understanding this, or at least putting constraint on this problem, would mean to understand much better what is the internal structure of the elliptical galaxies, in particular focusing on the dark matter halos, this correlation with the total mass, and to understand also much better the theory of formation and evolution of the early type galaxies. And in some sense also could be a way to test the validity of the lambda cold dark matter paradigm on the small and nonlinear scales. And so the typical diagnostic that one could use to study distant galaxies, and here distant we mean with that greater, relative greater than dot one, are the traditionally gravitational lensing on one hand and stellar dynamics on the other. But when taken alone, both of these methods suffer from degeneracies and limitations. I mean, briefly, gravitational lensing has the problem of the mass shift degeneracy, while stellar dynamics is hindered by the scarcity of dynamical tracers at large radii for the early type galaxies. And there is also this degeneracy between the mass profile of the elliptical and the anisotropy of the velocity dispersion tensor. So the basic idea behind this work is to try to overcome these degeneracies, at least to some extent, by making a joint and self-consistent analysis which uses both information from the gravitational lensing and the stellar dynamics. Broadly speaking, the gravitational lensing gives, if this is a elliptical lens galaxy, and this is all a very beautiful lensed image, lensed arc. So the gravitational lensing provides us with an accurate and almost model independent determination of the mass inside the Einstein radius, while the dynamics give us another constraint, which is the determination of the mass inside the effective radius. And of course, if we want to perform this kind of analysis, we need objects which are not extremely common. We need elliptical galaxies which are also lenses, and we need a decent number of them. And to challenge this problem, two surveys, namely the LSD and the SLAC surveys, were carried on by the SLAC's team, including several of the people present at this workshop. And they provided us with about 40 galaxies, 50 galaxies, and probably more to come. And these are a few examples. So from these kind of images, we can have all the information we need. Surface brightness distribution of our elliptical galaxies, the lensed structure, and also we need additionally information about the kinematics, so the first and second velocity moments for the same lens galaxies. And this is provided or will be provided by two-dimensional integrated field spectroscopy taken with VLT VMOS, or for the northern targets with long slit spectra along the minor and major axes of the galaxies. So now we have all the pieces we need to begin our analysis. And first order pioneeristic and very solid work using this data was already done by Leon and Tommaso, treating up to this phase the lensing and dynamics as two independent problems. So basically, the Einstein radius, the lensing is used to fix the total mass inside the Einstein radius. Then one assumes a total density distribution which has the form of a power law with a slope gamma, and tries to constrain the slope gamma using the information from the dynamics, in fact, mass inside the effective radius. With this approximation for the dynamics, one assumes that spherical genes equations are a good description. And they found that... yes?
Overall,
And this is the total density distribution.
What do you, because you don't propose that the dispersion we measure is that of a dark matter.
Potential, I mean it's our spiritual of the total potential where you embed a trace population of stars and then do the calculation. We also did the analysis separating the components and
So the result of this analysis is that this slope gamma turns out to be very close to 2 with a very reduced intrinsic spread. And there appears to be no significant evolution in the considered sample between about the ratio of dot 1 and 1. However, although this analysis, this study was extremely promising and sound, there is the necessity for an approach, an analysis which is fully self-consistent. This is what I'm aiming to do. This is important. It has several advantages because, first thing, it is, more rigorous. Then it also allows to make full use of the information that we have and to make models that, are not limited to spherical, but we can go to axisymmetric model. And we can obtain also much more detailed information about the kind of potential that we have and the parameters of this potential. And also, to some extent that I will say shortly, soon, we can have some information about the internal dynamical structure of the elliptical galaxy. So this is basically a scheme of the method that we devised for the joint self-consistent analysis. And it works in this way. We start considering axially symmetric gravitational potential phi, which will depend on some nonlinear parameters eta k. Then at this point, we use this same potential for both the lensing part, the lensed image reconstruction, and the dynamical modeling. Going a bit, the strength, I would say, and the novelty also of this method is that these two blocks here, inside these two blocks, these two problems, can be expressed, can be written formally in an analogous way as systems of linear equations that can be solved with the standard linear optimization techniques, which allows to challenge this problem in a very quick and reliable way. And the idea is basically is to minimize this penalty function, which includes the chi-square and regularization. So of course we have to choose some suitable regularization operator. Making a further step that we have been doing just very recently, last Tuesday effectively, also implemented the BFGS method to put some boundaries in our solution in such a way that our solution are physical, so we get positive solutions for the source and distribution function reconstruction, as I will tell now. Then, for each of these initial models that we assume, we find two solutions. And then we need a way, objective way, to rank and compare these models to find the most plausible nonlinear parameters. And this is provided by the Bayesian evidence, which can be considered, can be seen as a generalization of the maximum likelihood in the Bayesian framework, and which McKay has also shown to embody the principle of the Occam's razor, so to avoid to be a good method to avoid over-parameterization. So now, we perform this iterative cycle varying this nonlinear parameter. So this is an iterative cycle, but these two problems are solved very, very quickly. So this full problem can be challenged also numerically. And when this converts, we get the most plausible values for these nonlinear parameters, eta k, for the given potential, and as a byproduct, also the best source reconstruction and distribution function reconstruction. Now I will go into more detail in what happens here, because this is the core of the for the lensed image reconstruction. Writing this problem as a linear set of equations is pretty straightforward, because this comes immediately from the non-parametric source reconstruction method that, for example, Leon has described in the discussion of Monday. And this is an example. This is a mock source which produces this mock set, this mock image, and this is the reconstruction using the right parameter, right potential with the right parameters. And you can see that the reconstruction is very, very effective. For the case of the dynamics, however, these problems, I mean, writing this problem, dynamical model, as a set of linear equations is less evident. It's not so easy. So the method we adopted is this two integral Schwarzschild method developed by Ferolmi and Desailly that we modified in a more numerical way. And basically, it is a Schwarzschild method in which the building blocks are not, as usual in Schwarzschild method, the orbits, but building blocks are these TIC, which are effectively Dirac delta distribution function, which are completely specified by a given energy and angular momentum. The advantage of this is the following. First, any axisymmetric density distribution can be described as a superposition of these things. Also, the unprojected density and velocity moments are extremely easy, are analytical and extremely easy to calculate given the ticks. Of course, calculating the projected quantity still would require some lengthy integral, so numerically wouldn't be so fast. However, this is a very, very good approach because it allows us to write our problem as the equation I've shown before. Given a potential and a couple energy and angular momentum, we completely define our TIC, and from that we can calculate the surface Brayton distribution and the moments. And to calculate the projected moment, the projected quantities, we use this numerical approach in which effectively we send mass points inside the zero velocity curve. And we reproduce, for example, in this case, the density distribution projected face-on, or in this case, edge-on, and I'm showing what happens with a single tick. Each of these points that we send here in the meridional plane, projected meridional plane, carries also the velocity moments. So we can calculate the projected velocity moments without having to solve this complicated integral. And this also allows to treat numerically quite fast also the problem of PSF, which is included into this method. So this is how the superposition of the ticks works in practice. So this is effectively, this is one tick, so this is the angular momentum, and this is RC, which is a function of the energy. And for each TIC, this produces a surface brightness projected distribution and projected moments, weighted projected moments. And summing up this with proper weights gives us the final result. So basically, this is the method, how these are summed up. And this is an application to show that the reconstruction really works also in practice. So this is a quantity which is proportional to our distribution function. This is, again, angular momentum versus energy space. So this is a distribution function, our thick distribution, which produces this kind of surface brightness and moment, velocity moment. And this is the reconstruction that we get in the case of the best model. Of course, adding noise and using the model which is not tuned, the right result will make this problem a bit more difficult. But we are now carrying on this simulation and tests, and we are seeing that even if we use a much we use not that many ticks, like here where we have about 50 times 20, still we can have a good reconstruction, a reliable reconstruction. And I will spend a few words on the evidence method and why we use this. I will not go into detail since this was developed and well described in a paper by Sherry, and I think she will tell more about this in the next weeks. However, we use the evidence because it's a very, very powerful and flexible merit function, a flexible method, which allows not only to rank our model and to decide what is the best set of parameters for a given model, but it also allows something which is not in general possible in orthodox statistics. It allows to compare different models, so to perform model comparison. And as I was hinting before, also automatically embodies the Occam's razor, so penalizes the unnecessary complex model. For example, in this, this is an example given by McKay himself, who is one of the persons who developed this evidence formalism in the beginning. This is the data space. D is the data space. C is like the observed the observed data, and these are two different models which are both centered on this set of observed data. But this is, we say, a more flexible, more powerful model because it can predict a larger data space. This is like, we say, a more simple model, but predicts the data more strongly, and so is preferred by the evidence approach. So this is what we mean with Occam's razor in this context. So, in conclusion, this is the project so far. The core of the code that I have been describing has been completed, and we are doing a lot of tests on mock systems, and in particular now on the non-linear part of the optimization. So it's almost complete, and we plan to apply in the next future this code to the observational data that that are available. We have the SLEX Galaxy, about 17 full data sets, and more probably are coming. So the final goal that we want to achieve is to obtain the mass density discrete profiles for a good sample of elliptical galaxies between redshifts of 0.1 and 1, and then to compare this possibly also with numerical simulation to understand how good is our understanding of the formation and evolution of elliptical galaxies. Thank you.
So, do you find that the IFU data buys you much in having different position angles covered?
I'm sorry?
The integral field, you mentioned you had kinematics from integral field as well as simple long slit.
Yeah, well, for some targets we have integral field data. For others we just have the major and minor axis.
Actually, this has changed.
It has changed, sorry. Yeah, okay. There was an update I was not aware of.
Yeah, so in KEC we are doing not major and minor axis, but we're doing sort of form and integral field spectroscopy. So we're moving the slit and taking out the rotation. So since KEC is bigger and the Q is higher, we can almost in the same amount of time map, say, half of the galaxy, then we will the entire galaxy BMT, because they are small, relatively small. So you will have data of, say, comparable. Maybe BMT would be double the area, but not just pure major minor.
I guess my question is, if you were just left with major and minor axis, how much worse would you do than having the full
simulations?
Yeah, of course, your constraints are worse, but the method still is effective. For example, where is it? Here, in principle, you could have a single pixel, which is like all the integrated field in a single pixel. Of course, your constraints are not as good as in this test case. So, for example, you cannot constrain very reliably, I mean, all the parameters. In particular, determining the inclination, we are finding it's a bit tricky, because there is still some degeneracy between the several parameters, the length, strength, the inclination, the ellipticity. So, of course, you just have one point, you can have like two sets of possible solutions. But in general, what I'm seeing also with some noise is that the evidence of the best reconstruction of the true case really always gives you the true solution, because now with the mock case, I know what the true solution is. So I'm confident that.
Are you limiting yourself to two integral models? Are you planning to explore the third integral, or that's one? Okay, that's different. I guess you want to do this first. So you are using pixelated distribution in the FEJ space. Have you compared that with simply sort of expansion techniques such as the basically a parameterized distribution function as expansions of the energy of the angular momentum space, such that you automatically ensure smoothness without having to regularize.
Okay.
Has the advantage of you being able to present this analytically by few coefficients.
Okay. The second thing we have not done, but for example here what you see, this is the Evans distribution function, which is completely analytical, and we use this one because we can compare with the true moments, and mm-hmm. I mean, if you want, I can show you a slide. It's very live.
I was wondering if at the moment whether the information is detailed enough to do a full dissection of the F of EJ space.
Yeah.
Or is the information limited to few parameters, in which case it's more advantageous to do it as a sort of a
the test will show that the whole issue is this method is extremely fast. It's extremely fast. Well, fast in one system, probably still one half day or day to the whole volume of the information. But the problem is the old method was that you had to do a six dimensional integral. It just takes forever. And so even if you make expansions of the distribution function, you still need to integrate all the six dimensional
space. No, that's not what I meant. What I meant is using these two integral models, you have two approaches. One is to write F of E as, for example, as energy from to one power, as a few exponential E components, and angular momentum to some powers of 1, 2, 3, etc.
You use the same.
So it's all analytic. You get your projected sigma, projected v, etc. analytically, or at least written in one integral. So it even takes even less because you don't do the inverse property. You don't do the. You have less degrees of freedom than what you have here in pixelizing the phase space. Anyway.
To answer the question, the second thing you are saying we did not try yet. But however, the main purpose of this is not to reconstruct the distribution function. Of course, there are some things that we can reconstruct, but for example, this region in general is not well reconstructed because we are going to very central region, and these things produce very central ellipsoid that you do not probe with your data. So of course, the information you can have about your distribution function is limited. But the main purpose is, of course, to constrain the data of the parameters of the potential. And the first question is why we use this two integral Schwarzschild method. Well, we do this basically because this is the best that can be done. Because if we go to the third integral, the problem becomes much more lengthy and complicated, and we cannot express this anymore as a set of linear equations, so it would take forever to be solved.
I know the problem because I would treat it the same problem in triaxial potentials using the super orbits as the F of E J orbits as a shortcut to stochastic orbits, which are difficult to work with. So that's precisely.
Yeah, so it's a complement
advantage or numerical advantage.
In effect, you mean every step you have to solve the complete structural problem. Every step you change your potential.
Yeah, you have to generate your library of orbits at every step. So you do that. We do thousands and thousands of steps.
And also, I mean, one thing with what the evidence method can do is can tell you what kind of coarseness of the distribution function you should choose. If you choose too many pixels to describe your distribution function, then the evidence goes down because the open razor says this is not allowed by the data. So there is an objective way for us to choose how to what pixel scale to take and how much to recognize, etc. And also we mentioned the kinematic brightness, but also the surface brightness of the lens which you get from HST data. If you have a description or a simple description of the distribution function, I'm almost convinced that for a given potential you'll never ever match the surface brightness distribution of the lens given both the parameterized potential and the parameterized distribution function. The freedom that's allowed by like distribution functions is to match that surface brightness as well.
Move on to cloud. That's the question.
I have a related question about the smoothing of the distribution function.
We use the regularization. We have this. Where is it? We construct this regularization operator along x and along y, so along energy and along angular momentum, and those are unrelated, so they can be independent. And this is a curvature regularization. And that, of course, prevents to have a distribution function which jumps from one point to the other. And these methods effectively prevent to have a negative distribution function, because if you do not enforce these, as I have had discovered, there, you have that you can find this, curiously, very extremely good solutions which have negative distribution function. Like you have part of your space with negative distribution function, very close to zero but negative. So that's completely unfeasible and has to be solved. This adds a little complication. It makes the method, I don't know, the 5% calculation time more, but it's necessary. While for the Lenzinger, the construction was not necessary.
Okay, so we should move on. So let's thank you, Matteo. Yeah. Next speaker is Fabio Rino.